Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and James Kovacevic has graced us with coming back again.
Hey, thanks, Fred. Happy to be here.
All right. And the last episode, we were talking about statistics and using the data that we have and all these other stuff. And I thought, you know, I'm going to keep you and record one more episode with you and explore a very practical application of that data that we should be collecting and analyzing, and it makes a big difference. And so, as I mentioned just a moment ago before we started recording, is getting the right number of spares for essential pieces of equipment that you need. It can be very expensive. And if you get it wrong, can lead to a lot of downtime. And so my basic question, and it's related to something I taught years and years ago in a course I taught for a friend of mine, was that you needed to know the failure rate and the failure rate pattern. And I'm thinking all the way back to the United Airlines.
The six failure patterns.
And you need to basically understand what your patterns are. And for that particular equipment or piece of equipment that you're going to do the repair on. And in order to know that pattern, you need to model it, to have failure data and so on. So there was this kind of chicken and egg thing. And then add on to it, you need to do some regression analysis as a baseline to understand, is it an increasing or decreasing failure rate? But you need a failure rate. Right. But if you're setting up a new piece of equipment, you don't have anything, you don't have a failure rate. So I guess I got two questions for you, James. One is, in practice, given our propensity to jump into the statistics textbook all the time, how do people really do this? And then two, would knowing the failure rates and a model of its rate of change over time make a difference? Do we need statistics for doing this kind of a saving money on getting your spares stocking levels correct or appropriate?
Yeah. So we'll back up to your first question. How do people do it? So the primary way that I see organizations do it is Johnny tells Sammy, hey, we need 10 of these in stock at all times. Mm-hmm. Okay. And all of a sudden now you have 10 of those in stock. That is the primary way that I've seen spare parts stock levels set up. It is intuition, gut feel, and if we need 8, let's stock 3 extra just in case.
Well, there is that concept of safety stock, right? It's intuitive. People say, well, what if I can't get it that week? What if that factory we buy them from is closed for 2 weeks for some reason, or we get a shipping delay or for whatever reason, a little extra margin on the uncertainty. So just anecdotally, somebody says, hey, we need 10 or the manufacturer says, oh, here's your first kit. I think the worst kit I ever saw was they sent them basically the entire piece of equipment in parts. It was one of everything. It's like, really? You got to be kidding me. Yep.
And that's how it's done. It's intuition. It's guessing. It's relying on the manufacturer, who probably is going to make more money on spare parts than they did on the entire piece of equipment.
Oh, and then they even make more money if it's a rush order. They have to bump somebody else off the list.
Exactly. What I see right now is it's a lot of intuition, a lot of guessing. Very few organizations I've worked with, even with that guessing, go back and validate it later on. They just leave that guess in place and don't bother adjusting from that. That's what I see right now.
Well, it's a lot of money, though. If I just say, oh, I need 10 of those and they're $50,000 each, that's a lot of money.
Oh, absolutely. It's a huge amount of money. I'll pull up some statistics here. If you give me 1 second, I will find them.
All right.
So 30% of your stock will probably never be used. It'll be obsolete before you actually use it. 8% of your storerooms typically duplicates.
Mm-hmm.
81% of order quantities are wrong, meaning you're ordering 5 when you should probably be ordering 7 or 2, depending on what the economic order quantity is.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a very concerning one. 97% of lead times are wrong in the CMMS.
Oh, so wow. Yeah.
How do you do a demand-based ordering system if your lead times are wrong in the system?
And you're saying it's from when you place the order to your vendor to ship you 5 widgets, and you're expecting it to be there in 2 weeks, and that's just fiction.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So with all those wrong things, you think we would be a little more concerned about the data within the Material Master, the data within the CMMS, and looking at this information to make sure that we're going to not throw out at least 30% of the parts that are in our storeroom.
Well, put this in context, though. My limited exposure into some factories is the maintenance stores, the spares, just spares, could be a significant portion or more value of dollars spent than the equipment itself. So it varies by industry and the type of equipment, but I think the military is saying that the maintenance train following the say a jet fighter is like 3.5 times the value of the fighter itself. So it's millions and millions and millions of dollars just to maintain that piece of equipment.
Absolutely. And that's why you try to optimize life cycle costing it before you even design it, so you can minimize that.
Right. So we get a piece of equipment in, we've got a storeroom. It's, you know, we keep adding, I've lost track of the number of add-ons and extra sheds and trailers that are parked near the maintenance bays, to just hold stuff. And then we lose stuff and you can't find it, or it rots, it gets rusty or it goes bad or whatever. All kinds of problems. But what impressed me is that the amount of money that goes into just spares.
Well, because when I think of spares are an insurance policy. They're an insurance policy against a failure that you didn't know about.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not treated that way. If we have a good plan and scheduling program, if we got a good PM program or predictive maintenance, whatever we're doing, we should be able to understand that a part is failing, order it in time, use it, and then go back to regular business, not mm-hmm. having to stock everything. If we can get a bearing from Tommy down the street in 30 minutes, why would we stock 30 of them?
That's right.
It doesn't make sense.
That's right.
So what I do with organizations is, let's not get into statistics yet. Let's talk about a basic approach to managing your spare parts.
Okay.
So if you want to stock a spare part, here's what you do. You take a 5x5 risk matrix. On one side, you got probability of failure. On the other side, you got part lead time. Organize that out. So for part lead time, say half a day in the first column, 1 day in the second column, 1 week in the third, 4 weeks greater than 8 weeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you look at probability of failure, it's at the very top at 5, it's one per day, or likelihood of consuming one part per day,
mm-hmm.
1 per week, 1 per month, 1 per year, less than 1 per year. Simple 5x5 risk matrix. Now, when you do that, anything from a 15, 18 and above, that's a critical part that we need to be concerned about. So if it's somewhere
either a long lead time or we use it a lot or both.
Yes, okay. Exactly. If it's somewhere anywhere between 3 and 12, we're going to want to consider stocking it. If it's a 1 or 2, don't bother stocking it.
We either don't need it very often, or when we do need it, we can get it quickly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Very simple. Does it take into the consequences of not having it? No, it doesn't. But at least it gives us something to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once we understand that, what we're going to do with it, we can determine a minimum quantity. So to determine a minimum, it's you're going to estimate the usage per year, or better, if you have some data, figure out what you use on average per year. I know averages aren't the greatest, but mm-hmm. it gives us something to start with that everyone understands. So we're going to take that.
You're so, getting dangerously close to my favorite metric there.
I know.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're going to take that usage per year and we're going to divide it by 365 times the lead time. So if it's a 5-day lead time, 10-day lead time, that's going to give us our min hold quantity.
Yeah. Okay.
Simple.
Yeah.
To determine the max, we're going to take that minimum and we're going to add the average consumption during lead time. And that is simply the daily usage times max lead time. Now we got a min and max that is based on usage and lead time.
Mm-hmm.
Not intuition, not guessing, but how much should we actually use, or how much should we stock based on what we actually use? Relatively simple. Not mm-hmm. the most advanced, not the most complex model, but it's enough to get us started and not guessing.
Yeah, and I mean, it's same structure I would propose. What I'm thinking, though, is that when you mentioned the statistic of the lead times and the systems being wrong, I think part of that is that lead times vary. It's not always, I mean, I might be able to get that bearing down the street in a short car ride, or just call them and they'll deliver it to me in a couple hours. What if they're closed? What if they're, it's the weekend, or it's grave shift, or there's a variability there. It's not a normal distribution. It's going to be some other distribution that starts at what the minimum physical with no barriers whatsoever. But on larger purchases, then I've got the vagaries of our purchasing program. Well, how many levels of approval do I need this week? That can vary.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. You have to take all that into account. But that's when you start getting into more of an advanced analysis. The basic analysis is just that. It's basic.
Yeah.
Like you said, when you start talking more advanced, well, then you're not just looking at lead time times probability of failure. You're also looking at cost and criticality to determine what is that risk number that is acceptable for setting up stock versus not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That when you get to the minimum quantity, you're going to use some statistics to figure out what is the actual lead time based on your data, right?
Well, that, it gets into that part of, well, what kind of data should we collect? Because if we're not tracking, and we probably have it, is when was the order placed and transmitted to our supplier, and when did it was received? Unfortunately, a lot of times that data might not be in the same system. And it should be in the CMMS, but if you pull up, say, last year's orders of bearings and look at that variability, then I've got that value. But I think the more fundamental step before getting into variability of lead time or variability of approval time or batching of different price breaks, if I order extra quantities, for example, if I buy 10 bearings versus 5, I might get a price break and may want to do that in some cases. But I think that rate, if this year I had 2 bearings fail and I go, and it's a couple week lead time, I'm going to stock 4 just because. Or I think in the formulas you had, it would be 2, maybe 3 would be stocked. But bearings wear out. Initially, they're fine. If they're set up and installed correctly, they're going to run well for quite a while. And then they wear out. And so if I put in 10 new motors and shafts and I've got these new bearings on them, two's not going to cut it because now I have this different failure pattern. And some of those we know, like bearings, we know they wear out. And so it's one of those things where I'm looking at it going, I was in a factory a couple months ago, and most of the equipment was about 30 years old. And they were looking at major repairs across the board on this stuff. And it wasn't something that they didn't anticipate. They just didn't realize that it was all going to happen at once. It was kind of like the car I had in high school. lots of stuff happened all at once.
We had the same car.
Yeah. So you learn to appreciate the ability to forecast and project out and move forward. It gives you the advantage of getting the right parts at the right time. The amount of variability that's in our systems is the reason I harp on using statistics quite a bit. And the amount of money we put into spares and waste in spares and storerooms, you can pay for a master's degree easily for half of your staff to go sort this out and get it right. But I agree with you, James, is doing some of the very basic start, get it started, is probably going to get you a huge return right away.
We did an exercise where we did that very basic analysis. We did a couple other minor things. So we looked at economic order quantity as well for parts. Mm-hmm. But we took a storeroom that had $2 million worth of parts. Mm-hmm. So not a big storeroom by any means. We did that basic analysis. And in terms of estimated usage, we took their history they had over the last 4 years. And I know you don't like it, but we averaged it out each year over the, right?
Yeah, I understand.
So we did that. And then we ran all the parts with that data through that basic calculation, min, max, and we did some with economic order quantity as well. Mm-hmm. The stuff with enough data, that's what we did.
Right.
Within, you know, I'd say a week or 2 weeks worth of work, we took that $2 million storeroom down to 1.5.
Nice.
And it wasn't a huge team. There was 3 or 4 of us. That's all we did for 1 week. And that's what we were able to do. Now, we didn't take all those parts and just throw them out because they were being used. All we did is adjust their min maxes in mm-hmm. the system and burn through the excess. That's what we did.
Oh, yeah.
And it worked. It worked great. And there was some hesitation around certain parts, you know, even though the data showed there's just still some hesitation. So what we did is we set up some safety stock for those ones in particular. Mm-hmm. And that helped to ease people a little bit. And then once everyone was comfortable, then we went back and reviewed the safety stocks again, 6 or 8 months later and further reduced the storm again, because we have more data now once again.
Right.
So it doesn't take a lot of work. It doesn't take a lot of effort. All it takes is a little bit of time just to think through what data do I have? What can I do with it? Mm-hmm. And with spare parts, there's standard formulas available. They're not proprietary. They're not special. They're just basic formulas in logistics that you can grab and use to do some of this basic analysis. Build it in a spreadsheet. Email me and I'll send you a spreadsheet with this stuff built in. So you just plug your data in and it'll shoot the information out for you. I'm okay with that. I'll send it to you free for anyone who wants it.
All right.
But just start with the basics.
I wonder if we could probably set that up on a Dropbox and have it. I'm trying to think if I don't think we can upload a spreadsheet to WordPress to have that downloaded, that it'll stay safe. But there's a way to. Well, we'll see. If you get a couple thousand requests for this, we'll know how big the show is, and then two, if anybody listens this long into the show.
Absolutely.
That kind of thing. Oh no, cool. Yeah, no, you're gonna have to send me that because I want to compare that to what I used to teach, because mine was really based on knowing the variability of the failure rates, knowing the variability of lead times, knowing the variability of it got into way more detail, I think, than is really necessary.
But that's eventually where you want to get to if you're running an advanced program, minimizing costs as much as possible. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, the majority of organizations I deal with, they're still guessing on what their min and max should be. So this is a way just to standardize that methodology when you go to set up a part or to review a part on a frequency, whether it's once a year, once every 2 years, whatever the case is. Mm-hmm. It just gives that basic framework. It's simple. It's easy to use.
I just had to change the title of this to Improving Spare Stocking Without Statistics instead of With Statistics.
Well, we can cover statistics, but in my experience, the majority of people I work with, they're not even at the point where they can do that. They can just, they can take simple things like we just talked about on those basic formulas and make a significant difference in their sight.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what it's a part of the process though, is that then it creates space and budget basically to then do some basic training on statistics and do a couple of parts and see what difference it would make and get used to that algorithms and tools and what data you have and what data you need. If you're in that factory, you mentioned that saved $500,000 in their spares, and hire a statistician, you know, or a logistician that understands the finer points of this stuff and help get your system in place and save another $500,000, on an ongoing basis.
Absolutely. And when you start to get to more complex scenarios where you have that high variability and lead time, you have four of these things scattered across North America, for example, mm-hmm. but they each cost $250,000 or $1 million a piece. Well, now you really got some considerations to do. What are other failure rates? How do these things fail? Can we detect the failure? Mm-hmm. All those mm-hmm. things. And that's when we really want to start getting into statistics, I think.
Yeah.
But
definitely.
But from a beginning standpoint, basic averages work well enough to get us to a point where at least what we're doing is based on data. There's always room for improvement. We can always build some great models to further that analysis and that optimization. But start with the basics, get that stuff organized, free up some time, free up some bandwidth. Then, like you said, get some training in there. Develop some models so you can actually start using your data from using statistics to further optimize your spares. But it's stepping stones.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, good summary, James. I think we'll just wrap it up right there. I wanted to talk just briefly about a practical application of it, but I think we stayed on the practical application, and it was out setting the stage for coming back to a more advanced one. So as a listener, I mean, where are you? Would just the basics get you started? Get a hold of James. We'll add a direct link to, you can contact him in the show notes, and get the family friendly, engineering friendly, formulas on a spreadsheet to sort out the basics here and get your min and max quantities for your spares and then start tracking it and figure out where you need to go to apply another round of engineering talent, basically, to make it work. Not sure if I'm trying to avoid saying statistics. I'm stuttering a little bit.
And Fred, I'm going to be I'll be a little shameful at this point. Anyone interested in this topic specifically, I'll be presenting a workshop on this at the SMRP conference. Titled Gatekeeping Your Storeroom. So it's all about, how do we determine what goes into the storeroom? How do we make sure we set the right min-max levels, quantities? But then also, how do we set up and capture the right data for these spare parts so we can facilitate these and more advanced analysis down the road?
So it's a paper or a tutorial?
It's a four-hour tutorial.
No, I had no idea you were doing that. So good plug. Yeah, no, I support that. This is the SMRP, and this is, if I remember right, it's in St. Louis this year?
Kansas City,
center of the country, whatever. That's fine. No, yeah, we'll put a link to that in there, and that's a great place to get a download and all kinds of great stuff that you have, James, so that's perfect. That'll work. All right, and if you want more details on that, well, you can go to the SMRP conference website, but also get a hold of James directly, and he can tell you a lot more about what he's going to cover in that. That'd be great. Might have to, if that goes well, we'll have to get you to do it for the Ascendo.
I've already thought of that. Once we do the dry run there, or not the dry run, I teach this in a course, but once we do the condensed version of that there mm-hmm. over the 4 hours, definitely looking at doing it as a webinar.
All right, cool. Yeah, let's, so if is listening, you know, where are you on this kind of stuff? If you have, you're using intuition and guessing, there's a couple of ideas James laid out there that'll get you up to the next level and start using the data that you probably already have and use it to help you save some money and save some time on your system. Another level is to check out the tutorial at SMRP. And then after that, let us know what you need. What are you looking for? And I'll remind James again about doing a webinar for Ascendo, and I'm sure we can come back and talk about it. But let us know what you're interested in. If it's more on spares and MRO and all that good stuff, let us know. If there's other topics in your reliability program that you're interested in, we're certainly interested in hearing more about that. And planning our future shows around it to best meet what you're interested in. So with that, James, I think we'll wrap this one up.
All right. Perfect. Thanks, Fred.
Yeah, thanks, James.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.